Over his 7-decade career, Ray Bradbury became one of America's most beloved authors. Sam Weller and Mort Castle have edited a collection of new stories inspired by his work from 26 writers, including Joe Hill, Margaret Atwood, Dave Eggers, Alice Hoffman, Neil Gaiman, and Charles Yu. It's called Shadow Show, All New Stories in Celebration of Ray Bradbury, and it's published by William Morrow. Joining me now to talk about how Ray Bradbury has influenced so many writers are Sam Weller, whose previous books include a biography called The Bradbury Chronicles, The Life of Ray Bradbury, and Joe Hill, author of the short story collection 20th Century Ghosts and the novels Heart-Shaped Box and Horns. Welcome to our show.
Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Joe, when Bradbury died this past June, even President Obama issued a statement about how images from his work are imprinted in our minds, often when we're young. What is it about Bradbury's writing that makes such lasting impressions?
You know, Sam and I were talking about this on the ride over here. I think that one thing about Bradbury is that most people do discover him between the ages of about 8 and 18. And so he isn't really examined so much as absorbed. You know, when you read a story at the age of 12, you're not usually reading critically. You're just wallowing in story. And so a lot of writers who discover Bradbury at that age just take pleasure in him, and those stories and his language and his rhythms become absorbed into their unconscious. They find themselves regurgitating his ideas and aesthetic as a grown person without even knowing they're doing it.
Now, Sam, as Joe points out, a lot of his readers are young, but also many of the contributors who talk about their experience with Bradbury mentioned reading him when they were in grade school before they were even teenagers. Was he writing ever with young readers in mind?
That's very funny you should ask that. Today is, of course, his birthday. He would have been 92 today. So it's a fitting day to be on here. And he told me the first time I sat down with him in May of 2000 that he said his secret is that he is a children's author. So he would relish in this discussion right now. I've always maintained that he's the great gateway author. He helps usher young adult readers over to literature by deceiving them. He writes literarily, but he's writing about rocket ships to Mars and mummies in the catacombs of Mexico and fields of Greentown, Illinois. And so, you know, I think his secret is, he said, he always told me, I never forgot my root system. His childhood was central to his creative process, his sense of play as he sat down at his typewriter, and I think that comes through when you pick his books up.
Well, his work is well known and well respected, but fantasy and science fiction weren't always considered serious literature. Did that bother him?
Well, I'd let Sam answer that, but I do think that when Bradbury came in and first started writing his, you see, there was a time period when fantasy and science fiction wasn't considered serious literature. But if you go back a little further, there was a time when there was almost no line between what was literary and, you know, and what was genre.
H.G. Wells, for example. Mm-hmm.
Charles Dickens mm-hmm. wrote more than his share of ghost stories. You know, I think if you go back,
Henry James.
Mm-hmm. Shirley Jackson was published in The New Yorker. So if you go back far enough, you find this period when the lines were blurred, and that's where Ray Bradbury came from.
But he's also credited with being one of the writers who elevated the fantasy and science fiction mm-hmm. genres in a way that a writer like Elmore Leonard is credited mm-hmm. with elevating mm-hmm. crime fiction, because he didn't just do when Wu was on the island Mu, he looked up at the six moons kinds of stories.
Mm-hmm. His book, his 1950 book, Martian Chronicles, is really credited now historically as being this book that sort of brought literary acceptability to the genre of science fiction. To your question of did it bother him, I think at the time in the early 50s when he was writing during the golden era of science fiction, his publisher Doubleday was stamping a science fiction original on the covers. And I have letters in my files where he was battling that inscription on his book. He didn't want that. He said, you know, Aldous Huxley and George Orwell don't have that stamped on their books. Why do I have to?
And Margaret Atwood, one of the contributors to this book, also argues against it. She describes what she does as speculative fiction. Do you think that's a good way to describe Bradbury's work?
You know, I think that Bradbury's work is always thought experiments that reveal character. You know, what is revealed? There's his famous story of, you know, the folks who arrive in Mars and meet the Martians, and there's this sort of discovery of the strange, and one person can't deal with it and comes out drunk and shoots up the Martians and, you know, starts the first Martian war. What this story is really about is meeting people who are different. You know, it's about a universal theme, which is xenophobia. And that's Bradbury was never content to just make his stories about themselves. They always had to be about larger ideas.
And people have said that the best science fiction is really always about the present.
And he would say in many ways the best stories are really parables or metaphors for something, a much larger human truth. And I think it was Slate magazine that called Bradbury the closest thing we have to a modern mythologist. His stories are impactful and memorable instantaneously just through their very ideas. And he would say that he stumbled his way into discovering that he was writing these sort of timeless myths.
In an introduction that you include in this book, he writes that Edgar Allan Poe was his true papa, the first major influence on him as a writer. I suspect that a fair number of the contributors to this book would say that Bradbury was their papa. Did you talk to him about it before you put the collection together?
Oh, most certainly. He was well aware of the book. We launched this idea probably 3 years ago. It was Mort Castle, my co-editor's idea to do this book, and I thought it was a fabulous idea. I presented it to Ray, and he was tickled by it. We put a wish list together of possible contributors and were delighted when the floodgates opened and people started saying yes. I read many of the stories to Ray. His last few years, he was at home. He was not physically well, but mentally he was right there with us as he always was. And he loved the stories. I read Joe's story to him, and I looked up and there were tears coming down from under his glasses.
Now, Joe, is it your father, Stephen King?
Yeah, that's right.
I assume he's had some influence on your writing as well.
Yeah, I mean,
Do you think he was influenced by Bradbury?
Oh, no question. Absolutely. You know, he's written his share of Bradbury stories. And you know, I think there are certain subjects, you know, it's impossible for me to write about the month of October without filtering it through the Bradbury lens. Bradbury wrote a collection of stories called The October Country, and that is his country. It's very difficult for me to write about childhood or outer space or lake monsters. Without referencing what Bradbury had to say about those subjects first.
My guests are writer Joe Hill, one of the contributors to a new collection of stories called Shadow Show, All New Stories in Celebration of Ray Bradbury, which is published by William Morrow. Also with us is Sam Weller, who with Mort Castle edited this collection. And Sam, you said that you had a wish list for writers. Did they write the stories specifically for this book?
They all did. I mean, that was one of the caveats, was that they were all original stories. We didn't tell people what kind of story to write. We were well aware of Bradbury's influence in all of their lives, and we said, write a story that's in honor of this man. And that's all we said.
So, Joe, when you wrote your story by the silver water of Lake Champlain, were you thinking of some Bradbury stories?
Yeah, actually, Sam and I were just talking about this. I actually wrote that story right before I was asked to be a part of this collection.
You cheated.
Two or three days after I finished, I had an email from Sam asking if I'd like to be a part of it. And I thought, yeah, I might have something for you. Because when I wrote it, I was occasionally thinking of Ray Bradbury's story, The Foghorn, which is about a giant sea monster that falls in love with a lighthouse.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jan Chan's story, Little America, is about a boy and an old man on a road trip together. Mm-hmm. He says in this afterword that Ray Bradbury changed his life because Dan had written to him and sent him some stories when he was young, and Bradbury wrote back. Mm. Did any of the other writers have that kind of experience?
She wrote the story about the two brothers. I can't believe how much correspondence he kept up over the course of his life.
This is something when Bradbury passed on June 5th that I, over and over again, I heard people telling me, I wrote a letter to Ray Bradbury and he wrote me back. I don't know how he found as much time as he did to write 600 published short stories and screenplays and teleplays and architectural renderings and essays and poems, because he was constantly corresponding with people and drawing doodles for them and writing. So I think a lot of people over the years, I introduced Joe to Ray at Comic-Con a few years back, and Ray was elated to meet Joe. He was excited about it, and he was very good at corresponding. He was exceptional.
And you mentioned that he wrote screenplays, including one that might surprise some people. He wrote the screenplay for Moby Dick.
He did. And you know what's fascinating? Joe just referenced this story, The Foghorn, published in the Golden Apples of the Sun in 1953. John Huston, the great film director, read that story and said, I sense a touch of Melville in this, and invited Ray to the Beverly Hills Hotel one night and put a martini in his hand and said, how would you like to come to Ireland with me and help me kill the white whale? Mm-hmm. And the fear coursed through Bradbury's bloodstream because, like so many people, he had not been able to read and finish Moby Dick. But by God, he did it and adapted that book into a two-hour film starring Gregory Peck as Captain Ahab.
And there are a number of films made from his stories and novels, including one of the greatest directors that ever lived, Francois Truffaut, yes, doing Fahrenheit 451. Did Bradbury have a hand in the production of that film?
He didn't. He had a dear friendship with Truffaut and loved him. Bradbury was a little bit critical of the film. It cast Julie Christie in dual roles, both as the wife of the protagonist, Guy Montag, and as well as the young woman who sort of turns the firemen on to books. Her name is Clarice McClellan, and he cast Julie Christie as two roles. He cut some characters out. He removed the mechanical hound, this very villainous robotic creature, from the book. But at the end, and Bradbury was very proud of that movie. It's a very stylized movie, very Euro, very, very pretty to look at.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's worth noting, too, that Bradbury's influence doesn't just end at other writers. You know, when you look at early Spielberg, those early Spielberg are saturated with the influence of Bradbury, especially Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And who was a key character in Close Encounters of the Third Kind was Francois Truffaut,
yes,
who did Fahrenheit 451. So.
As well as rock music. I mean, Elton John wrote Rocket Man with his collaborator Bernie Taupin, based on a Bradbury short story that appeared in the Illustrated Man. The Pixies, you know, David Bowie, on and on and on. Rock and roll music has been influenced by Bradbury.
And when you look at some of these stories, the direct connection seems obvious. Bonnie Jo Campbell wrote a story called The Tattoo, mm-hmm, obviously connected to Bradbury's Illustrated Man. Charles Rue, you wrote about a future where the earth is uninhabitable, has been turned into a gift shop at a time he refers to as the age after the age of learning. And I couldn't help but think of the Bradbury story, There Will Come Soft Rains. Dave Eggers' Who Knocks is about a lake, and Bradbury always seemed to like to write about lakes. And if we could go on and on and on, your story, mm-hmm, The Girl in the Funeral Parlor, I'm assuming was influenced by Dandelion Wine.
Absolutely. I wanted, you know, as the story started to come in, I looked at what might be missing, and I wanted to have something that was Midwestern at its very heart and a bit of growing up in it, but yet contemporary.
I like the story you've got going about Wu on the island of Mu looking up at the six moons. You know, I've been thinking about it.
Could have written that.
No, I think Isaac Asimov already wrote that story. But the Veldt seems to be another especially important story for writers by Bradbury. Why do you think it affected so many writers?
Well, you know, I joke that Ray Bradbury invented the 21st century. I'm not sure how much of a joke it is. You know, the idea of being surrounded by immersive worlds, being in a house where every wall is a screen, isn't that different from our actual lives. You know, I think everything from the iPhone to 50-inch flat-screen TVs to, you know, the whole information superstructure of modern life was kind of anticipated in Bradbury's novels. And in that way, he probably had a better record as a futurist than many of his science fiction contemporaries. I'm sure he would be glad to see Mars Curiosity so busy up there. But
he would be.
He'd probably want some people coming behind.
What's ironic, though, he never drove a car. He didn't fly on an airplane until he was 62, and he never had a computer. Yet he was the best of the futurists from his colleagues.
Based on his author photos, it doesn't look like he wore pants very often either. It was usually boxer shorts and a tie.
There is eccentricity there for sure.
Joe Hill, Sam Weller, and other contributors to this book will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at the McNally Jackson Bookstore at 52 Prince Street. That's at 7 p.m. The book Shadow Show features Stories by some of our leading writers, including Margaret Atwood, Dave Eggers, Harlan Ellison, I should have mentioned him, Neil Gaiman, Alice Hoffman, Kelly Link, Robert McGammon, Jacqueline Michard, Audrey Niffenegger, and of course, Joe Hill. My great thanks to the two of you for being on our show to talk about this book, Sam Weller and Joe Hill.
Thank you,
Leonard. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.